Jalen Ramsey was number one on many people's draft boards. Miles Jack was number one on many people's draft boards, if not for the injury. And Jacksonville has gotten a vote.
Mangum rolling. Throwing. Picked off. Miles Jack.
That guy can be your star like Luke Kuechly is in Carolina. He can upgrade the whole defense. Kuechly was the best linebacker I've ever graded in coverage.
Really?
Until I graded Miles Jack. Miles Jack is a spectacular coverage linebacker. He's not just good or solid. He is elite.
Just because this team had a top five pick doesn't mean they're a losing team. They had a losing year, that's all. I can't wait for this team to get back to the top, and I want to be one of the guys helping do that.
That's what else.
I'm just so excited, man.
He's a special athlete. This kid is just, if all the tape I've watched, this is a different cat.
Well, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, good morning, everybody. Happy New Year. Hopefully, 2017 will be different. I understand the Jacksonville Jaguars are already 0-1 in the calendar year, but the 2017 football season officially starts right now for us as the Jags will seek to fill their coaching vacancy. Restructure their entire coaching staff. We'll see if anything happens with the front office and add some players in free agency and the draft, possibly a trade or two along the way. Who knows? And win some football games, as we heard that theme commonly expressed in the Jaguar locker room yesterday, Logs, as the players were clearing things out and wrapping it up for the offseason. Let's jump in on Blake Bortles, though, right away, because you've got me intrigued by what you mean by this. You say it's not a black and white evaluation of him. What are you, when you look back at the season that Blake Bortles had, how do you evaluate him?
He regressed. You know, I mean, if you look at, he regressed as far as you expected him to take a step forward from last year. And if you look at his numbers from 14, 15, and 16, you know, his completion percentage essentially stayed the same, you know, 58.6 to 58.9. I mean, that's not a jump. I mean, it's a 0.3 jump, but that's not a jump. His yardage actually went down. His yards per attempt went down. His quarterback rating went down. His touchdown to interception ratio got a little bit better. You know, so you're essentially looking at a flat number. You know, and even a slight regression in certain categories. So overall, because it's another year, you expect improvement. You would say he's taken a step back. And when they hire a new head coach, that's going to be one of the first orders of business is, you know, gathering an opinion and a consensus on the quarterback. And what I say is that when you, it doesn't have to be black or white. It doesn't have to be a thumbs up or a thumbs down. He's definitely our guy, or he's not our guy. Because you don't have to have that. I mean, you go back and you look in NFL history of teams that have valued the quarterback position. The Dallas Cowboys back in 1989 drafted Troy Aikman first overall. He was my draft class. And then in the supplemental draft, they go and draft Steve Walsh. And they say at the time, and Jimmy Johnson talked about it and said that, you know, we feel good about him and also that maybe he has trade value in the future, which they eventually traded him, I think, to the New Orleans Saints. But do you think Jimmy Johnson drafted Steve Walsh for trade value in the future?
No.
No. It was an insurance policy. He knew the guy that he was getting in the supplemental draft in Steve Walsh. But they expected Troy Aikman to be a franchise-type guy. But they didn't know he was going to be a franchise-type guy. The San Francisco 49ers had Joe Montana. They ended up having the ability to acquire Steve Young. Do you think that they said, okay, we don't believe in Joe Montana? No, they didn't have that opinion. They wanted to have somebody else that they thought might be a good developmental quarterback behind Joe Montana. So when I say it's not black or white, you don't have to say Blake Bortles is the guy and not address the position at all. You don't have to have the other opinion of it, which is he's not the guy, let's get rid of him. You can have an opinion that falls somewhere in between. We think he might be able to develop, but you know what? We're not sure. So let's go and get insurance. Let's go and try to find other talent at the position so that, one, we can create competition. And number two, if Blake Bortles isn't the guy, we got other options to go with.
Right. How much do you think they're willing to invest in creating this competition? I think is one of the big questions of the offseason, because you look at some of these guys. I'll use Mike Glennon as an example in free agency, right? He started about a season's worth of games with the Tampa Bay Bucks. A lot of people think he's just middle of the road or worse, whatever. But he may be one of the better available quarterbacks out there. And the better available quarterbacks, we saw what happened with Brock Osweiler, got a ridiculous contract. Often you have to extremely overpay at the quarterback position for guys that don't even rise to league average level. So, with Blake in the final year of his rookie deal, guaranteed money, do you see them bringing in a substantially priced free agent quarterback?
They could, because they can afford to do so. But when you talk about bringing a substantially priced quarterback, it's not of the line of, okay, it's a five-year commitment cost. I think if you try to do something like that, I think you're making a mistake. So the easiest way to do it is to bring in youth. You got Brandon Allen, who's already on the roster.
Right.
Next year you expect him to be able to get to the point where he can come in and compete a little bit. I think if you can find a guy in free agency, which I'm of the opinion that that's not the way to do it. I'm a believer in that you do it and get your own, which is through the draft. And whatever round that you covet somebody, take them. Take him. It's the most important position on the field. And maybe Blake Bortles turns out to be, next year, a phenomenal player. And if so, great. It worked out perfectly. But you got to have insurance just in case. And I've always said this, and people kind of scoffed at it. And Buscelli used to say, what are you talking about? You can't do that. I said, draft a quarterback every year. I think you draft a quarterback every year that you think that you've got a guy that can be a franchise guy. Whether it be in first round, the third round, fifth round, the seventh, whatever. It doesn't matter. You always pick a guy. And the reason you always pick a guy is because, first of all, you don't know whether your guy is going to be the guy because you don't have a guy right now. Number two is that you can always get value for him in the future. Rob Johnson's a perfect example. Steve Walsh was a good example for the Dallas Cowboys. They ended up getting some value for him. You always take a quarterback because you're always going to end up finding somebody who's like a Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler didn't end up gaining – anything to the Denver Broncos because he wasn't traded, he became a free agent. But if you work it correctly, you can end up getting value for players like that that have moments where they play, they look good, and then all of a sudden you get a high pick for them. You never pass up the opportunity at that position. So I think this team has to look long and hard at the position, and you don't have to say Blake is our guy or not our guy. And you go into the offseason with the expectation of we're going to try to get better at that position. We're going to get better with him. We're going to get better with the other people that we're going to bring in and with what we've already got in Brandon Allen.
All right, we'll talk about Blake today. We'll talk about the other players on this team, including some of the ones who made comments about how they were misused, how they felt specifically defensively this year. We'll talk about the coaching search and anything else you'd like to be a part of. Today, you can send your questions for Jeff Loggeman in a variety of ways at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Logs56 on Twitter, LOGS56. Tyler, we're going to wait on that. And you can do the Jaguars Today Facebook page. 641-1010 is the phone number, and it's also the number for the text line driven by Duval Ford. Our question of the day, as it is always every Tuesday, just to ask you to submit your questions for Jeff Loggeman, Jaguar related. We'll go to the phones next and just kind of recap the 2016 season, see where the Jags need to head in the 2017 offseason. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you on the first Jaguars Today of the 2017 calendar year on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jeff Loggeman lays down the law. Jeff Loggeman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Loggeman.
Yeah, it was a struggle. Finished healthy. The main focus for me, season's unfortunate. That's the main focus. I thought I'd be fine. Just finishing the season healthy, honestly. The way the season went, kind of a downfall.
That's Marquise Lee. Said it was a frustrating season, but it was his best year, obviously. Breakout in some way, if you want to call it that. I think it's just showing you what he was capable of doing if he had stayed healthy to begin with. I'm sure he probably understood the offense a little bit better and things like that, but clearly got a lot of separation compared to the rest of the wide receivers this year. And if you look at it right now, Logs, and it doesn't really matter because they're all on the team, but who's the number one receiver on the Jaguars?
Allen Robinson's still the number one, but I think you could make a case that you have co-ones. If Marquise Lee – you know, gets game planned a little bit more. You know, I think whenever you start a season out, you're creating a playbook, you know, with the idea of one guy is going to be the number one. And I think that going into the season, you didn't know that Marquise Lee would even be healthy, you know, so you didn't really probably scheme up a lot of plays for him. I thought that, though, that they really missed an opportunity in that game against the Colts. You know, when you go into that game and the Colts have two corners that are scratches, which was Darius Butler and Rasheen Melvin, and then they're playing Christopher Milton, who's a rookie, and he's matching up against Marquise Lee, and Vontae Davis, who is a pretty good corner, is matching up against A-Rob. I can't believe that some of the plays weren't designed more for Marquise Lee or that Blake didn't look more his way. I mean, they left a lot on the field for that matchup. I mean, they could – you know, you watch a game, and all of a sudden the commentators say, well, you know, he really is a target in this game. It wasn't a target in that game.
No.
I mean, Christopher Milton should have been a target play in and play out. I mean, he's a rookie, an undrafted rookie. And every time the ball went towards Marquise, with the exception of the one where he fumbled the ball and it was ruled incomplete.
Right.
He's killing the guy. I mean, killing the guy. Wasn't even close. And that was disappointing. I mean, that was an opportunity.
Who's that fall on?
Lost.
Does that fall more on Nate Hackett?
I don't know. I mean, is that coordinator, you know, saying, Blake, you know, this is the, you know, first read, second read, okay? And then, or is that, you know, Blake saying, you know, I'm throwing to my guy that I've been able to trust for a long period of time? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. You know? I would think, honestly, the way this season's gone, he has as much, if not more, trust in Marquise Lee at this point in time than he would in Allen Robinson. You know,
you remember the there was a pass to Ben Koyak in the flat that went incomplete, and Blake had to kind of throw it sidearm to get it around Eric Walden. Marquise Lee was wide open, and that's on the quarterback. I mean, that's lucky. It's basically a single read. Milton's playing an off coverage. He's got a cover two shell, two safeties back deep, and if Eric Walden drops into coverage, essentially, he's taken away the quick slant that Marquise Lee is running. If he comes with the corner off and the safety back deep, I mean, that's a free shot for a quick slant. If Blake throws that to Marquise Lee, they may not stop him. He may split the safeties and go, I think it was probably about at the 35, 40, might have been a 65-yard touchdown. Opportunity lost on that one.
Is that a bigger problem than the mechanical issues with Blake? Because here he is. I mean, the mechanical issues shouldn't impact your ability to see the field, right?
Yeah, that's a decision making,
right? That's just and field vision, and do you recognize who's open? And I mean, is that the bigger concern we should be worrying ourselves with? Because everyone talks about the mechanics leading to poor accuracy. Can he work on that to tighten it up? He's 3 years in now. Starting football games for this team, is he seeing the field the way he should be seeing it at this point in time?
Well, I think there are certainly moments that he sees the field very well, you know, and you know, we still have to remember, look, I know it's kind of getting old to say this, but he's still a young quarterback. I mean, and he is. I mean, you typically see quarterbacks break out when they get to, you know, years four and years five, where they show consistent, you know, production. Can he still be, you know, a franchise guy? I don't know the answer to that. But, I mean, I think the decision-making process, you still see strides being made going into year four and year five. And I thought that he has made some really good decisions. I think ever since they made the switch in coordinators to Nathaniel Hackett, I thought his decision-making got much better. But I know that there was a couple illustrations in that game where, look, you know, you got it's almost like basketball at times, you know, in football, is that it's about matchups. And that as a coordinator and as a quarterback, you got to be aware of where those matchups are that you can take advantage of. And I just didn't see a lot of awareness in that game for Blake. Even though he had a very good game, I thought he was very solid. I thought there was more to be had. And I think part of that falls on coaches and that you got to let him know that, look, here's what we got. And here's what we want you to look for. And when you see that matchup and it looks like you've got, you know, man coverage against a rookie, take advantage of it.
All right, let's go to the phones for the first time in the new year at 641-1010. If you want to talk Jaguar football or if you have questions specifically for Jeff, bring him to the table. Let's start with Mac on the north side. Good morning, Mac. How are you?
Happy New Year to you fellas. Jeff, is your last day, Jeff?
I don't know.
Jeff, no, we'll go through the playoffs like we have in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I know you're going to get ready to leave us, but here's my thing. It's real quick. That Doug Marrone interview, that's a token interview. I got hyped up for a little bit after the Tennessee game, but what after I saw Sunday, that's a token interview, and Ron Powell washed the hell out of here.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a token interview whatsoever. You know, I think that if you expect, you know, Doug Marrone to have influence in a 2-week period that is of any significance, I think your expectations are a little bit too high. You know, I think a coach needs time to put his stamp on a football team. So I don't think it's a token interview whatsoever. I mean, Doug Marrone's going to be a candidate probably for nearly every opening in the league that's going to be there this year, and there's 6 of them now, and there might be more. You know, he's done a good job in Buffalo. You know, look, he got him a winning season in his last year there. I think there's going to be a lot of questions from the ownership of the teams that have openings about why weren't you there for year 3, what happened, and he's going to answer those questions very open and honestly.
I would point to the Doug Whaley season-ending press conference
and that will absolutely help Doug Marrone's cause, you know, in that situation.
Doug Whaley, the GM of the Bills, who basically apparently is unaware of anything that's happening in the organization up there. If you know, I'm not going to go detail by detail, point by point on the press conference that he held yesterday, but that was what the Buffalo media came away thinking. What exactly are your duties? Because you claim to have no knowledge of coaches being fired, interim coaches being named, any major decision making that's going on in the organization.
Yeah, that was a very awkward interview, you know, as far as trying to get information of what happened.
Right.
You know, for Doug to say that the decision to fire Rex Ryan wasn't made by me, I had no awareness of it whatsoever. And Pegula, Mr. Pegula, ended up putting out an interview that was done with one person to kind of gain a little clarity on it all. And to be perfectly honest with you, I read the interview and it didn't really provide any more clarity on than what you had prior to reading it. You know
what the second point he made was Todd Wash has got to go, in his opinion. Statistically, the Jaguars defense was better. I hesitate to just hang your hat on statistics because we all know, you know, for instance, if teams feel like they can beat you just by running the ball, they're not going to throw it around the park as much as they need to, you know, and then you're going to give up less total yardage generally in those circumstances. The bottom line was, they let down on many occasions in the fourth quarter when they needed a critical stop, including this past week. I'm not saying they let down purposely, but they didn't get the job done at some key situations this year.
Didn't dictate the outcome of a game.
Right.
Which is what, you know, you want to be able to do. But, you know, I think Todd Wash is a fine football coach, and I think he did a very good job with this defense. I think he did a very good job of utilizing the personnel to their strengths. And I think he is going to be a candidate at all the places that have openings and other places that may lose people. As far as, you know, defensive coordinator be hired from one team and to be a head coach in one of those openings, and they're going to have an opening, Todd Wash will gain serious consideration. Look, it's a tried-and-true defensive system that has worked before in Seattle. It worked this year here in Jacksonville. The only category I think that you got to point to if you're a detractor of Todd Wash is the points allowed per game. You know, and that was not a good number. They gave up 400 points as a defense this year. That's not good enough. I mean, heck, going back a few years ago when the Washington Redskins scored over 400 points in a season, it was like, wow, what an offense,
record-setting,
yes,
right.
You know. And so, you know, look, I think the most important thing with a coach is that you've got to be able to garner the respect of a locker room and to be able to relate to players. And I think Todd Wash has check marks in both of those categories. I think he's a fine football coach. I think he was great. I was very shocked when Gus took the job here that he didn't install Todd Wash as the coordinator from year one. I thought that Todd Wash, just from my – and I didn't know any of these guys prior to them taking over. I didn't know Gus. I didn't know Todd. I didn't know Bob Babich. I didn't know anybody on the staff that came in. And – except for maybe I think a couple guys that they ended up keeping. But I can tell you, after getting to know Todd Wash and Bob Babich a little bit, my impression was Todd Wash is a front-of-the-room guy. You know, Bob Babich was not a front-of-the-room guy. And my opinions, after being around Todd Wash for 4 years, have not changed. I think he is a quality front-of-the-room guy, which when I say that, I mean to be able to get in front of a defense and to run the ship on defense. I think he's a good football coach.
I think that leads kind of directly into some of the comments we heard coming out of the game on Sunday and yesterday out of the locker room, especially from some of the guys that are playing on that defense, Jalen Ramsey and Tashawn Gibson specifically. Ramsey, his comments almost felt like he's a guy that's not used to losing. Whatever this
that's
losing
right.
is, I
he's
just
young.
Want it out. Yeah, I just want it out of the building if it means we're going to start winning again. Gibson was a little more interesting given he basically came out and said, they didn't use me the way I thought I was going to be used in this defense. Is that legitimate watching him this year?
No, it's not legitimate. You know, all he had to do was to turn on the film of what Seattle did with Earl Thomas to understand the role that he was going to fill. And that's exactly what they asked him to do, you know. And I thought that Tashawn Gibson had a very solid year. Solid year. I think the lack of pass rush, consistent pass rush, affects him a little bit because he doesn't get his hands on as many balls. The one thing about this defense that they run, it doesn't do a lot of different things. And so, you know, when you're a player and you're doing the same thing, play after play, game after game, I think sometimes it can get boring for a player. And I think Tashawn has been used to, you know, look, he played with Mike Pettine for a couple years where he was moved around, did different things, had different opportunities, flavors of the day. And in this defense, you don't get that. I mean, they have a belief in that this is what we do, and we coach offense, and we play our defense. And so I think he's off base if he thought that this defense wasn't what he expected, because the writing was on the wall for him to read at any moment.
Well, the problem I have is you look kind of silly coming in when he signed saying, oh, this is a perfect defense for me, the way they're going to utilize me, everything's perfect. And now yesterday he says, well, I didn't watch the film. I didn't really look into what the defense did. So then why'd you say that when you signed here?
Well, I don't get mad at players.
I'm not mad. I just think it's dumb.
And I think the whole thing, even though that Sean is a veteran guy, Jalen's a young guy, you know, with Jalen you have a tendency to go, okay, he's a young player. It's frustration. He's not used to losing, which you don't want anybody to ever get used to losing. But the same thing can be said for Tashawn Gibson. A frustrating year. The expectations were high. It didn't happen. And look, you know, here's an opportunity to, you know, maybe speak freely because we don't have a coach, you know, and there's no repercussions of what I say, you know. So, I don't put anything into that, you know, because it is what it is. And I think he's a fine football player. I think he's got great ball skills. And I think that he had some opportunities that he missed out on that he could have been better at. But look, it's water under the bridge as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think, you know, future staff is going to look at his comments and you know, reflect on him in any negative way.
All right, we got to take a time out here. We'll come back. If you're on the phone lines, we'll try to take it at a more rapid pace next segment and get a few more in at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you. It's Jaguars Today kicking off 2017 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for my friends at Dandy Foods. Yet another year under their belts, another year putting out products that you love right here in Jacksonville. How do I know that? Because they've got a successful, booming business. That's what Dandy does. They put out great sandwiches and subs. It's a simple formula. Great ingredients at a price that's going to put a smile on your face. Always convenient, always fresh, with tons of variety. What more do you want from food on the go? And Dandy's got it for you, whether it's the new breakfast sliders that they rolled out in 2016 or the light lunchtime wrap options. They've got something for everybody's palate, everybody's taste. If you're looking to lose a little weight as one of your New Year's resolutions, plenty of healthy options with the Dandy and Anytime Deli line of products as well. So pop into your local Circle K or Kangaroo Express. Don't waste your lunch hour in the drive-thru. You want food on the go. You want it quick. You want it satisfying. You want something that's always going to deliver and put a smile on your face. You want Dandy. That's exactly what you want. A local company, been doing it for over 60 years. Go out and make yours a Dandy. Do it today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars blow a 17-0 lead and the Colts win it in Indianapolis to finish out the season 24-20, the final from Indy. The Jaguars finished 3-13. The quarterback, Blake Bortles, 25 of 39, 301, one touchdown but two fumbles. And he said this offseason will be his best one yet.
The first two offseason, obviously going into the third one, the first two was kind of just figuring out. I didn't know what to do. I'd never had an offseason before. Didn't have a whole lot of people to talk to try and figure out what to do. So I think I kind of got a good thing down. So I'm looking forward to going out to California, getting started. and getting myself in the best possible shape that I can be in physically, mentally, and stuff, you know, to try and come in here and help this team out.
And one more cut, Jalen Ramsey on the season compared to his expectations.
It was worse than I expected because we lost a lot.
With your Jaguars Daily Update brought to you by JOI, I'm Tyler Devin.
All right, Loggy in the house, the first Tuesday of the year. He'll be here with us throughout the NFL playoffs like we typically do. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you talking kind of a post-mortem to the Jaguars 2016 season and beginning to look at where they need to go this offseason to get things on the right track. 641-1010, both the phone number and the text line number driven by Duval Ford. We'll start with Desmond on the north side here on this segment. Good morning, Desmond. How are you?
All right, how are you? Happy New Year's to everybody.
Same to you.
I have a question. It's going to be real brief. Mike, I keep hearing about Kyle Shanahan. And, you know, as a fan, you know, I wouldn't want to see a coach that never had a head coach experience personally. I wouldn't. And, you know, I don't know because Mike Tomlin from the Steelers, he never had, like, a head coaching experience before. And he's doing good at Pittsburgh. But me personally, I would like to see him more like a veteran, like coach, like somebody like even Mike Smith, Josh McDaniels, either one of them two. But the main thing is that going through the offseason, as everything, you know, that we need, like linemen or safety or whatnot, do you think we should also draft like another quarterback like in the fourth and fifth round? And that's the only question I have now that Tate comes up there.
All right, well, that's one of the first things we discussed this morning is you don't just take one for the sake of taking one. You take one if you think he can develop into at least a future starter, I think, in the National Football League, if he's got that kind of potential. Clearly, you can't know that about a guy you're taking in the fourth or fifth round, or you wouldn't wait until the fourth or fifth round to take him.
Right.
But I think that's what it comes down to. If you look at a guy like Brandon Allen, you say, I could see him developing into something. He may not be that right now. Then it's worth taking that guy.
Sure. Yeah, and there's not a lot of quarterbacks that have been drafted late. I mean, history shows that the high picks are the ones that develop and that have the higher percentage of becoming those guys. But, you know, I think with the way the college game is played today, it's getting harder to find quarterbacks that have NFL caliber skill sets because the college game is very different.
Not if you watch a Rose Bowl yesterday, man. Wrong. Wait one more year and you might be able to pick a quarterback. That kid could sling it for USC.
Yeah, so, you know, I believe this, that you always take quarterback. And, I mean, Dak Prescott is obviously the glaring example now that everybody's looking at and saying, well, how come we can't get a Dak Prescott? Well, Dak Prescott's don't come along very often at all. Tom Brady's don't come along very often.
Dak Prescott's, if there are other potential ones, don't get to walk into a situation with the best offensive line in football and a dominant running game, you know, to help take the pressure off them as well. Now, he's played great in addition to that, but he's got some advantages that most rookie quarterbacks or most first-time starting quarterbacks don't have.
No doubt. But, I mean, like, you're right about the offensive line, but, I mean, even most young quarterbacks, you put them in that situation, I don't think they can have that level of
success. Maybe not. You know, I'm not impressive. Taking all the credit away from Dak Prescott, but did have some advantages going his way.
Sure, absolutely. Now, the other question about wanting a coach that has head coaching experience, I mean, in a perfect world, yeah, that's what you want. You know, but and he brought up Mike Tomlin, perfect example. John
Harbaugh.
He was
only a coordinator for a year.
Yeah, he was 1 year as a coordinator, you know, and which is very strange. You know, if you have those parameters set in place for your head coach, you may miss out on the next Bill Cowher, the next John Harbaugh, who I have great respect for. You know, so why limit yourself to a smaller pool when you may be fine? You may find, you know, a true gem as a head coach. So, yes, experience helps, but is it everything? No, it's not everything, but it's definitely a factor. You know, because you're coming into a place that has expectations, and I don't want to say immediate expectations, but for the most part, it kind of does. You know, I mean, Mr. Khan and the fan base are expecting this football team, you know, if the personnel is supposedly in place, is they're coming in expecting this team to win.
I agree with that. The leash, so to speak, will be a lot shorter this time around and should be for anybody they hire, whether he's a guy with experience or not.
Yeah, and I think here's the thing. As when you hire a head coach, you love to be able to accomplish the number one goal, which is getting somebody who can take this team to wins. Number one, that's your goal. But number two, that would also be nice, is a name or a person that generates hope and excitement. And hope and excitement does one thing. Sells tickets, right? But here's the thing. At the end of the day, hope and excitement is not going to sell tickets in year two and year three.
Yeah, I heard Tony this morning on with the drill saying he would like to see him make a run at John Gruden because he would create that kind of excitement. He said, of course, it may wear off by week
but
three of September.
That's not what it's about.
Well, I agree. That's the point I'm making, is that if you're only going to have that excitement wear off, you know, when you hit your first two-game losing streak, then what good is it?
It's no good. And you're dead on the money. I mean,
your excitement will be created by the coach that can lead them to 10 or 11 wins.
In a perfect world, you'd have both.
You know, sure.
Somebody that creates hope and excitement, and then number two, sells tickets. And look, I mean, we all know the one name that I think that would be able to do that, that could get this team to win, that could, you know, sell tickets, also hope, which is Tom Coughlin. But there's not many names that can do that. I mean, there's not. I mean, you know, the Bill Cowers, the John Grudens, the Tom Coughlins, I don't even think that Mike Shanahan or Mike Holmgren could do that anymore. You know, so the most important thing is to get somebody that you believe can take this team to a level of winning, sustainable winning. That's the most important thing, because that will sell more tickets in the long run than anything.
All right, let's get Don downtown up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Don.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
All right. Happy New Year to you. I just wanted to make a quick comment and ask a few questions for you guys. First of all, you know, I'm just a little disappointed about the game, blowing a 17-0 lead last week, and the final 2 minutes pretty much winding down. They didn't even make an attempt to try to get down the field and, you know, actually score, potentially put the game away with a touchdown. I was a little upset about that. And I just wanted to ask you guys, you know, your feelings on that. And my final questions would be referring to the defensive and offensive side of the ball. If there was one specific position that you guys could improve on, obviously running back on offense. But what would they be for offense and defense? And do you guys think that it may actually be a good idea to try to instill a consistent fullback back into the lineup, like when we had a Greg Jones or a Chris Fumatamalafalo or something like that, that may also help improve our run game?
Nice job on the pronunciation.
It was close.
It was close.
It was close.
It was pretty good.
He missed one syllable.
He did, but it was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Well, you know what we used to call him? We used to call him Foo.
Yeah, of course.
I've listened to y'all's broadcasts. That's not surprising.
Yeah.
Foo. Foo Matu Malafala. We say, hey, that's Foo.
All right, one position on each side that you'd look, the whole thing, you might as well say other than quarterback, because unless you get improved quarterback play either internally or externally, it's not going to matter.
I'd love to see this team. I mean, first of all, running back, I think, is a key position. You know, you look at the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones and their approach. I mean, they basically said, and a lot of people laughed at them and said, that if we can draft a running back and end up getting Ezekiel Elliott, if we can get a running back, it really takes pressure off of our defense, really takes the pressure off the quarterback position, and we think with our offensive line would provide us great balance. Jaguars don't have the offensive line of the Dallas Cowboys, but I still think that there's a lot of yards that are left out there by the Jaguars' current offensive line that they didn't get this year with T.J. Yeldon and Chris Ivory.
Here's the problem I have with that, is that when Dave Caldwell decided he wanted to get a running back, he decided, let's get T.J. Yeldon, as opposed to guys who were drafted after him were proven to be much better than T.J. Yeldon. Mm-hmm. So what confidence level can you have that he's going to select the right one? Now, I'm not saying don't draft one at number four. Like, I think Dalvin Cook or Fournette, I think either one of those guys may be worthy of that selection, okay? But let's say you go, you know, I guess it's that way with any position. What do you have the confidence level that Dave Caldwell is going to pick the right guy and to Ezekiel Elliott doesn't come along every year, I guess is my point. And if you're going to draft one later than the first round, you've got to have a better feel for, you got to hit more than you did with the T.J. Yeldon pick.
Yeah, you got to do better than that. And I remember that year because, it was pretty obvious that the Jaguars were going to draft a running back, and T.J. Yeldon was not at the top of my list. Besides the two top guys, that were drafted in that year, and they were Gurley and
Melvin Gordon,
yeah. San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, David Johnson.
Maybe
only the best running back in football.
Yeah,
you got
David Johnson.
Year.
Who else was in it? Ajayi? Was he in that class?
Ajayi, yeah. He was drafted in the fifth round.
And then also in Atlanta, there was a guy.
You had Amir Abdullah, I think, went to Detroit, right?
That's who Arizona wanted.
And I just remember
desperately was Abdullah.
There were a couple of guys that I kind of found out after the fact that had some medical questions. Just looking at the college tape, TJ was probably number four or five three, four, or five. If you got away from the top two that were just, very apparent, the top two running backs. And me and Dave Caldwell had, discussions about that because I have, before the draft and after the draft. And, I still liked him. And I thought that he would be good in like the third or fourth round, but I didn't think that he was worthy of a
second
round pick. And the reason I believe that is that if you watch the University of Alabama, and it was TJ and it was, the Heisman
Derrick
Award,
Derrick Henry.
The difference between when those two were in was huge. Derrick Henry was just a man, and TJ was good, but there was a big difference, in the production. And so I just said to myself, "I said, boy, if it's that big of a difference when Derrick Henry's in the game versus TJ Yeldon, is TJ Yeldon really that good?" Blinding speed.
The need to go out there and feel like you had to sign a starting running back this offseason after 1 year. Chris Ivory came in, and the contract you gave him
Number one starter money.
Right.
You can make that argument. But, to get back to the question, the positions, I think that a running back would help. But, look, if they go out and they draft, a big-time offensive lineman, high. And when I say high, not necessarily the fourth overall pick in the draft, but if there's somebody that's warranted at that spot, then you take them. If it's a defensive lineman, I'm a big believer in that you can't ever have enough defensive linemen. The guys that always impact the game the most are the ones that have an impact on turnover differential, plain and simple. And the ones, the positions that really don't have that great of an impact on turnover differential, I think you got to kind of take a pass on.
Right. For instance, strong safety is a big need because right now Jonathan Cyprian's contract has run out, and you're either going to have to get something out of James Sample and have him stay healthy for the first time in his career, or find a new guy, or bring back Cyprian. But like you said, that's not as big an issue as give me another guy who can get to the quarterback 10 times a year,
right.
And get him on the ground 10 times a year.
I really think they did a really good job with Ngakoue. That's a great pick. For him to come out of the gate and have 8 sacks to show the improvement against the run that he did. I'm really excited about him. I like the way he works. I like the way that he's improved, because to be perfectly honest with you, when I watched his college tape, you watched his play against the run, and it was terrible. And I thought that he really worked hard at that and really started to understand that needs to be part of your game in order for you to be on the field. And I think, a lot of the credit for that needs to go to Todd Walsh. Todd Walsh is the defensive line coach and the coordinator, and then he worked hard at making sure that he understood that. And the big question mark is what kind of a defense are they going to be running in the future? Is it going to be a 4-3? Is it going to be a 3-4? So a lot of the questions that you have about, what they should take in the draft, I think you got to kind of hold off on the defensive side of the ball until you kind of get an understanding for what kind of a defense they're going to be running.
All right, we got to take a time out here. We'll come back, get more of your calls. We got this State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, and talking Jags with you at 641-1010 on Twitter and on Facebook. First day for Jaguars today in the 2017 calendar year. With Fat Tony and Jeff Logman, I'm Mike Dempsey, live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, kicking off the new year, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, January 3rd, going back to 1983. Tony Dorsett set the NFL record that can't be broken under the present rules. 99-yard rushing touchdown against the Minnesota Vikings, the longest play from scrimmage.
Got to go to that CFL field.
Have. You could. And I assume they have a 109-yard rushing touchdown in the CFL at some point.
Watch them play games with rogues being scored in American football fans'
that's
minds
a rouge.
Be blown.
Isn't that a rouge?
I have no idea. Spelled rogue.
A rogue. All right. 1993.
That's a popular word nowadays.
Rogue One. Yeah. Maybe Tony's got Star Wars on the mind. Buffalo rallied from a 32-point third quarter deficit, defeating Houston 41-38 in overtime in the AFC wildcard playoffs back in 93, the greatest comeback in NFL history. Frank Reich threw four touchdown passes, and kicker Steve Christie booted the game-winning 32-yard field goal to ice the Oilers that year. Birthdays for this date, 1963. Jim Everett, longtime Rams quarterback, a one-time Pro Bowler who twice led the league in touchdown passes. How about this combination? Born in 1980, David Tyree, who pinned the ball to his helmet to defeat the undefeated Patriot team, or helped the Giants do that. 1 year later, Eli Manning was born on this very date. So the combination, both born on January 3rd, Manning 36, Tyree 37, Manning a four-time Pro Bowler and a two-time Super Bowl MVP, and would-be Jaguar Mackenzie Bernadou, born on this date in 1986, 31 years old. Didn't make it out of training camp with the team and didn't get signed on anywhere else, I don't believe, either.
So Chris Everett's birthday is today?
Ah, yes.
Jim. Was it Chris or Jim?
It was Jim.
Oh, you mean
right.
Jim?
He was playing the Jim
Rome
role right there. That honestly, that made Jim Rome, yeah, I thought, nationally.
No
that
question.
Moment, you know, it really did. And Everett kind of laughing, but I think he was half serious. I don't know if to this day, I think. If you told me it was completely staged, I would buy it because I thought it benefited both of them. Jim Everett, who wanted to not have the reputation of being soft, I guess, right? And it was primarily because Jim Rome called him
good
Chris
TV.
Everett all the time. It was at the time. It was, you know, back in the days of who's the guy from Cincinnati that always had the show where people went crazy? You know, the guy used to be the mayor of Cincinnati. Oh, come on. The talk show.
I don't know.
You know exactly. He had the guy, Steve, was a guy, his security guard on stage. You know the show. Come on.
What are you
still
talking
on
about
today.
Jerry Springer?
Jerry Springer, yes, okay. Exactly. It was Jerry Springer kind of thing. Where
I really didn't know until you went Steve. I was like, Wilkos? Is he talking about Wilkos?
Yes, he was the mayor of Cincinnati. You didn't know Jerry Springer was the mayor of Cincinnati?
I did know that.
All right, well, there you go.
I gave you
a good context clue then. Anyway, that's what I got for this date in football. Brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. Call 620-9225 for their offices or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Yeah, Springer Show, still on afternoons at 3 o'clock on Fox 30.
I knew it was still on.
Yeah,
still
and
going.
It's exactly how you remembered it being.
How do you know that?
Hasn't changed. Oh, I've watched Springer. Like, if I'm home at 3 o'clock, Springer's on. Oh, I love watching that stupidity.
I can't watch that stuff.
Oh, man. White trash paradise. Watching that show. Watching people have much bigger problems than me. It's kind of fun. Adam Jones was arrested early this morning, has been charged with assault, disorderly conduct, obstructing official business, and harassment with a bodily substance, according to court records. There's obviously a lot going on there, so it basically breaks down like this. Jones is accused of pushing a man and then poking him in the eye. That's when law enforcement got involved. Pac-Man was unwilling to comply with the officers actually kicking and headbutting an officer when they were trying to place him in the back of a police cruiser. Then comes the harassment with a bodily substance, which stems from him allegedly spitting on the hand of a nurse while he was being booked. The playoff matchups for this weekend are set. They will get started in Houston when the Oakland Raiders come to town at 4:20 on Saturday. Raiders head coach Jack Del Rio was asked about Matt McGloin's availability for Sunday's game. He responded saying, quote, "We'll see how the week goes." McGloin left the Raiders' loss in Denver on Sunday, underwent an MRI on his injured shoulder. If McGloin can't go, then fourth-round rookie Connor Cook will get the nod against Houston, who is dealing with quarterback issues of their own. Tom Savage was unable to return after halftime on Sunday because of a concussion, leaving his status for this week's game in doubt, and it's a short week. It may actually force the Texans to start the high-priced free agent quarterback prize they landed this offseason in a playoff game, that being Brock Osweiler. So a couple of stories to keep an eye on there with the playoffs just a few days away.
All right, let's get Wayne in downtown. He's been hanging on, and we'll get to the text line coming up here in just a moment. Some doozies coming in already this morning. Wayne, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Happy New Year to you guys.
Happy New Year to you.
All righty. Hey, listen, I just got two questions real quick. One is concerning Blake Bortles again. I know we talked about that. My question is not so much the mechanics, even though that's a big part of it, but it's quarterback awareness or quarterback IQ is how you would say it, I guess. If you remember in the fourth quarter when it's tied 17 all, less than 2 minutes, I think it was like a minute and 48 left on the clock, and it was third and five. At this point, you got to be thinking to yourself, you know, we get a first down, we can run at least another minute off of this clock before we can attempt a field goal. He throws the ball on the run when it was clearly 5 yards ahead of him. He could have easily got and kept that clock moving. So I always wonder, quarterbacks who have that, I think that's why they win so much, that awareness of clock management, the situation at hand, and everything. And so I wonder how you guys feel about that. And secondly,
well, you point out a good play that I showed last night on Jaguars All Access. He did have clear field man coverage and could have run it in that situation, but he opted to throw it to Allen Robinson.
It was
which
a third
was,
and five, right?
It was third and six.
Okay,
right. He had one defender ball in front of him, but he had a blocker right on him. And
it was a defender that was actually covering the tight end on a crossing route, so he would have continued to go with the tight end.
Right.
You know, and as a quarterback, when you've got man coverage like that, it's an opportunity to run. And, you know, look, I don't criticize him on that. I mean, yeah, you look at the film, you can run it back a couple times and say, man, you should have run it. You know, but look, when you're under live fire and you're making a decision, that's not an easy decision to make. And here's the other thing. You know, we have always kind of praised Blake as far as his ability to make plays when the play becomes off schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's always been one of his strengths. Now, this year is a little bit different. But, I mean, for the most part, we've seen him be able to do that.
So, you're okay with that play?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd like to see him run. But, you know, I can't sit there and go, man, that was just an absolutely boneheaded decision, because it's not. You know, if the throw is better to Allen Robinson, it's converted anyway.
Right. All right, here's one. Money-wise, the NFL has progressed enough. This is on the text line driven by Duval 4. The NFL has progressed enough to allow a 65-man roster. All teams need it in December. Fans need to organize and demand owners get off a few million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, here's a couple things. If fans organize, great. More power to the fans organizing.
And doing what exactly? Picketing the league office to
the league already
expand
has,
the
league
roster?
Already has. It already does have 65-man rosters. You've got 53-man rosters that are active. You've got a 10-man practice squad. You have PUP, which can expand the roster, however many guys that you have on the physically unable to perform, and you can also have an additional roster spot with an injured reserve designated to return. So that could add up to actually, well, above and beyond 65. It's just a matter. It's a shoe game, you know, when it comes to bringing players up and putting them back down to the practice squad and off the active roster, or vice versa. So, I mean, the number of roster, the numbers that this person is asking for fans to unite and to hold the owners accountable to have, it's already there.
And beyond that, obviously an expansion of the roster would entail a change to the collective bargaining agreement. But under the collective bargaining agreement, the players get a certain percentage of the revenue that is applied to the salary cap, period. How that's divvied up, every club has its own way of doing it. You have to spend a certain percentage of that every year. But unless the owners are also willing to give them a bigger piece of the pie, let's say you're getting 50%. Well, that 50% then is chopped up 65 ways instead of 53, because the practice squad doesn't count against the salary cap. And the players are not going to want, you know, these players, hey, more jobs, great. But that means less money for each job out mm-hmm. there. So they're, it's not as simple as, hey, let's all organize and force the owners. You're not going to be able to organize and force the owners to do anything, quite frankly. Because even if you organize and say, you know what, we're not going to show up to these games, they make so much money off the TV contracts alone, and the TV ratings would probably spike through that anyway. I don't even think that would ultimately move the dial. I think, you know, if you don't show up to games and attendance really lags and the tickets aren't being sold, sometimes they can get a coach fired, right? But beyond that, the idea that because you think this makes logical sense that every other NFL fan is going to agree with you, A, and then secondly, I don't know. I just had a lot of problems with that whole premise.
I would like to. In fact, if you could actually go and add up, okay, because at the end of the season, the Jaguars had 10-man practice squad,
53-man active roster. Okay, that's 63 right there. And then how many did they have on injured reserve? You know, it probably was, what, 7, 8, 9, whatever it was. I mean, you're actually probably –
they had 13 players on IR.
Okay, so 13 plus 10, that's 23 plus 53, that's 76.
Right, available to him this year.
Plus Woodard on the PUP, so that's 14, and Rashad Lawrence on the practice squad on an injured list, so that's another one.
78.
All right, moving on the text line. If Blake starts out playing decently, I suppose this one going in the positive direction. This is for 2017. Do you try to lock him up, say, by midseason on a contract, and how long-term do you go with a guy who's proven to be inconsistent? I don't see any contract for Blake Bortles until after the 2017 season plays
out. I don't either, and I have not seen inconsistency. I've actually seen consistent. If you look at the numbers, he's fairly consistent. But what you're looking for is a higher level of consistency. You know, because, I mean, if you compare the numbers from 14 to 15 to 16.
I think what he's probably talking about, or he or she is probably talking about, is game-to-game consistency. Like, you can have a game like he had against Tennessee where he throws for 325. He doesn't have any interceptions. He can also have a game where he throws two or three picks and one of them gets taken back to the house.
Right. No question that you got to have consistency at a higher level. You know, and I'd be curious to know, you know, I mean, first of all, if a quarterback does have, you know, a separated shoulder, as Blake claimed to have had two of them. I mean, look, I don't care what you do. I mean, has anybody ever tried? I mean, I remember having separated shoulder and playing games with separated shoulder. I didn't have to throw football. And it was hard enough sometimes just to put shirt on after the game, you know, so I can't imagine trying to throw a football accurately with a separated shoulder. I don't know how much that impacted him and his ability to perform.
Right, that's the
thing,
right?
Clearly it's going to have an impact.
It's going to have some kind of impact, but if he had been a guy who was consistently a 65% passer and then this season were the aberration, you'd say,
right,
okay, let's find that reason, and I think he doesn't get that benefit of the doubt because, I mean, heck, from day one he came in not throwing spirals here to the very first practice he ever
Here's the one thing that I think fans should appreciate about Blake Bortles is, one, he's going to work hard. He's a hard worker. He's tough as nails. He's competitive. He's going to fight you and fight for his team till the very end. And, you know, look, there's a lot of other quarterbacks in the league that you don't get that, you know. So I appreciate those things about him that I'm describing. And most importantly, because those things that he possesses gives him a chance to get better. The quarterbacks that don't have those traits or characteristics don't have an opportunity to get better because they're just not – they don't have the toughness to fight through it, you know, and he's got that toughness and he's got the work ethic. And I think that you – even though there was a little blip on the radar, so to speak, at one point in the year where there was some conversation about criticism of the quarterback that was an unnamed source and all that, for the most part – he is very respected in that locker room, very respected, commands the huddle. So, I mean, those things are all positive that give him a chance.
All right, let's take a time out here. We'll come back and we'll head to Twitter where a lot of questions have come in for you this morning. Logs, if you'd like to get on board, you know the various ways to do it. Social media on the phone lines and the text line at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman. Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Two right, one left. Hand off to the right side of Corey Grant. There's some room for Corey. Into Colts territory, 45, to the 40, into the open field, to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown. Corey Grant has gone the distance and extended the lead for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right, Corey Grant, best game of his young NFL career. Yeah, well, he put him on, or that's what they saw when he broke into the clear. He's a tough guy to bring down. Had a nice game. Certainly, and Jags needed it in the run game without Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon available in Week 17. Our next caller wants to talk about Corey Grant, as a matter of fact, and that's Rob in Mandarin next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, guys. I just wanted to see what your guys' feeling was on Corey Grant and where he sits on this team going into the future. I mean, he's quick. He's fast. So I want to see how you guys felt.
Well, the one thing about him is that I don't think he's quick. I think he's fast. You know, and I think the one criticism that I've had with Corey Grant has been in the past when he would try to make a cut, he goes from 100 miles an hour down to like 10 to 15. And look, the Colts are not a great defense. The week before against the Raiders gashed them.
Excellent day for Corey Grant. Give him credit. 18 carries, 122 yards, you know, in the touchdown run. But is he a every down back? No, he's not. He's exactly what he's been, which is a backup. And he had a really nice game. Congratulations to him. Does that make me change my opinion on Corey Grant? No.
He can't really move the pile. You know what I mean? It doesn't look like he's ever going to be a great between the tackles runner.
No, that's not what he is. He's a space runner. He really has elite speed. I don't know exactly what. I know that what ESPN has done those things where they actually rate guys and they show they're actually their top end speed. I've seen it somewhere. He's one of the fastest players in the National Football League when he runs, but I think it was T.J. Green ran him down there at the end.
Right.
I mean, credit T.J. Green, the rookie safety out of Clemson, for doing a pretty good job of catching up with him, because I didn't think that anybody would be able to catch Corey Grant. But, you know, it's a nice performance. And, look, they had him at kickoff returns earlier in the year, and they were expecting him to be an impactful player at that spot, and he wasn't, you know, because he slows down too much. If he hits things with speed, like the little cutback that he did, but great, you know, he had an opportunity there. And I think part of that was, too, Blake and the play action itself did a great job of drawing the edge defender out away from closing the window, so to speak, on the backside cutback.
All right, thank you, Rob, for the call on that. Let's get Jerome on the south side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning, good morning. How y'all doing today?
Doing well.
You there? Are y'all there?
Yeah, we're fine. Go ahead.
I just want to. I think they shouldn't waste no time hiring a coach. I think they need to go ahead and hire whoever they have at the top of their list. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean that's the goal. I mean that's why that they released Gus Bradley when they did, so that they could be, you know, the first team to make things happen. You know, and they started the process pretty much immediately in lining up interviews with those that they could. And this week they have supposedly a whole slew of interviews lined up. I mean, this is a team that wants to make the move happen quickly, so that when they do acquire their head coach, then they can go ahead and allow that coach to start assembling the best staff possible. And so I think they've done it right. They're handling it correctly. But, you know, the reality is that they had to wait until this week to be able to interview a large segment of what the coaches – pool is available for head coaching positions.
And on that, here's some of the reporting in terms of who they're lining up to speak with here. Adam Schefter reported the Jags have scheduled an interview with Kyle Shanahan for Friday. That's according to Schefter. And Ian Rapoport said between Friday and Saturday that he'll do interviews with the Rams, Jags, Broncos, and 49ers. So potentially in demand, certainly in demand to be spoken with.
The coaches list, by the way, you mentioned that with Denver. I think the coaches' wish list shifts a little bit with the Denver job coming open, which I don't think anybody expected as of a week ago.
Oh, it's by far the best job available.
Yeah, so there may be a guy that the Jags have at the top of their list that now wants to go to Denver if he gets the opportunity to do
right.
that.
Right, and with that, Josh McDaniels, according to Ian Rapoport, will do three interviews late this week, one of them being the Jaguars, the Rams, and the Niners, or others.
Not the Broncos.
Well, he's already been with the Broncos, so we don't expect that to happen. Ian Rapoport said the Jags expected to interview Mike Smith for the head coaching vacancy. Doug Marrone, Rapoport on Marrone, interim coach Doug Marrone, had dinner with Shad Khan last Monday to discuss the opening, likely another meeting. Shad Khan, according to Rapoport, solicited many opinions on the opening. One Super Bowl winning coach advised him to promote Doug Marrone. That, again, according to Rapoport. Doug Moore, who covers the Patriots for ESPN Radio in Manchester, New Hampshire, said he's hearing the Jags are expected to request permission to interview Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia in the near future as well. Any other names that you're hearing as far as, you know, other than Coughlin?
No.
Dave Tobe became a hot name today, the special teams coordinator with Kansas City. So
yeah,
there may be a bunch of teams looking to interview him
this
week.
What is it, Harold Goodwin?
Harold Goodwin, in Arizona offense coordinator, mm-hmm, out there, yeah. I think they've requested permission to speak with him, haven't they?
I'm not exactly sure, but I know his name has popped
Maybe
up
it was
with the Jaguars.
Expected to, yeah. So
look, it's, you know, there's a lot of names that probably are getting interviewed that aren't getting reported. You know, I mean, I'm sure that the reach is, and Dave Caldwell talked about this in his press conference, that, you know, they're going to have a wide net, you know, thrown out there to look at the pool of candidates. And You know, the most important thing, I think, is, first of all, there's got to be a comfort level in the interview process with the owner, the general manager, and the person that's interviewing, but also the vetting that happens before that process even begins. I mean, the background research, et cetera, is pretty extensive. And there was a piece that was written somewhere, because I don't know if the Jaguars are using a search firm or not in their process to help them along, but I know that certain teams have used that firm in the process, and it's almost kind of like, and the article even talked about this, that it's kind of like a Match.com thing, you know, where they have these certain things that they're looking for, where the owner is looking for and the general manager might be looking for, and then they have questions that they ask candidates, and to see, you know, the likelihood of a marriage being good. You know, I don't know if there's a farmersonly.com kind of set of circumstances or variables, you know, yeah. I don't know. But, you know, it's just interesting to see how the process works, you know, because you know what, you know, a lot of times what owners have typically done in years past, they've always leaned on somebody, you know, leaned on, you know, maybe a retired coach, leaned on a retired general manager, you know, so and with, you know, these type of firms that are getting involved, it certainly has thrown another variable into the equation.
All right, let's get to some of these Twitter questions. I promised you, Logs, at Have the Compass. Demetrius asks, in your view, does Ben Kwiatkowski's progression make Julius Thomas expendable? You can throw Neil Sterling into the equation as well. Do the presence of Kwiatkowski and Sterling and add in the price of Julius Thomas at his production level make him expendable, in your opinion?
Well, most importantly, I think that Julius Thomas, you know, and I've been talking about this for 2 years with him, is that you need to have him be a competent blocker to really utilize his skill set. And has he become that? No. He has become better than what he was the first year that he was here, but he still was not at the level that you need him to. You know, and there's almost a point where, okay, Blake Bortles going into last year, this year, okay, you got Allen Robinson, we need to get him the ball. You've got Julius Thomas, well, we need to get him the ball. Allen Hurns, well, we need to get him the ball. Marquise Lee, we need to get him the ball. At some point, you know, when Julius Thomas was in the game, you almost felt like that the balls were being forced his way instead of letting the balls go his way happen organically. And I think sometimes that even happens with Allen Robinson, you know, where the coaches are saying, well, we need to get Allen Robinson more involved. You know, I want a coach that comes in here, and me personally, that doesn't say we need to get him the ball, we need to get him the ball. I want a coach that says we need to get the ball to the person that needs to get the ball in the game, the person that's open, the person that's going to be productive. I don't want to hear a name. I want to hear the quarterback, when he drops back, his mind is free and clutter-free of, well, I need to get him the ball. I want him to drop back and play quarterback. You know what I mean? So,
right, but I get that in that moment. But I also get, like, saying we've got a special talent, or we believe we've got a special talent in the position. Let's devise ways to get that guy to be the guy who's open on more plays.
Well, they have to do that. But at the same token, special talent shows itself. So that special talent, if it's on display, it will be open and available for the quarterback to choose from. But I almost felt like at times over the last couple of years with Blake Bortles is that the conversation has almost been to where you could also see where the ball was going to go in games. You know, okay, well, we need to get Julius more involved. And all of a sudden, the first couple of plays of the game, you see him trying to force it into Julius Thomas when he's not really that open. You know, that's why, like, the last two games, you know, Allen Robinson got the ball against the Tennessee Titans because he was open. You know, this past game, I think there was a little bit of a situation where the ball was forced to Allen Robinson, but the ball was going to Brian Walters
because he was open. In the Tennessee game, they also talked about moving him around the formation specifically to create getting him open.
Right. And I'm all for that. Like, I'm not saying that you don't create opportunities for your talented players, but it's a mindset that I think, you know, like Tom Brady, when Tom Brady drops back, he doesn't give a crap who's open. He's going to throw the ball to the open guy. And I think that a little bit of the issue offensively has been, in my opinion, in that, you know, you have talent at all these positions and you're trying to distribute the ball to where everybody's happy. It's not about making everybody happy.
It's about making the offense productive in the, at the end of the day.
All right, this one in from Any Given Sunday. Should we find a new way to get the best out of Dante Fowler, or is he moving in the right direction?
No, I think he's moving in the right direction. I would like to see him in some way be able to play really different positions, because you know he's a very talented player. If he can handle it, if he were able to be able to learn two positions, you know, Otto and Leo, or outside linebacker and designated pass rusher, I just think it would be great to be able to find more ways to get him on the field with Yannick Ngakoue besides in just a sub package.
So did they do a poor job of utilizing him?
No, it's his first year playing football. I think in the first year, I think you really kind of narrow the focus for a young player. But I think as he grows and as he matures, you need to find ways to utilize his skill set to get him on the field to where he's not just a rotational player, but he's got to prove that he can handle it. But he is clearly unbelievably talented. And I think he has things to offer besides just playing that, you know, that Leo position. I think he could play outside linebacker.
Man, well, he talked about it yesterday. He said he felt like he was, I'm paraphrasing here, too restricted by being asked to play only in a three-point stance. And he felt he's better in a two-point stance.
He is better. He is better in a two-point.
And well, then was that a poor decision to in evaluating him to try to fit him into a system that was going to require him to play in a three-point stance?
No, because I think he's shown that he's better in a two-point, but I think he can play both. You know, in the defense, the way it is right now, I think with a young player, you kind of keep him very focused and keep that focus very, very narrow. I think as he shows that he's not necessarily mastered, but has accomplished a very comfort level at playing one, then you can go ahead and say, okay, we're going to expand your responsibilities to include other things. So I think that role will expand the more maturity that he gains and the more experience that he gains.
All right, we'll get a few more in on the other side. Our first day of the 2017 calendar year with Jeff Loggeman on this Tuesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Logs here with you live at EverBank Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for my friends at Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. The Thompson family, a local group that has put out a quality product, a great product for over six decades here on the First Coast. They're local. They support the local sports scene, the local economy, and in turn, they support this program in a big way as well. Hey, lunchtime is coming up in under 30 minutes. You haven't made plans today? What? Just head to your local Circle K or Kangaroo Express. You pop right in and really maybe spend 2 minutes just deciding which variety of Dandy or Anytime Deli sandwich you're going to get today. That's going to be the hardest part of it. You go on, check out, you're on your way with food on the go. That's delicious. It's fresh. It's the variety that you like, and it's at a price that puts a smile on your face every single time. That's what Dandy's doing, whether it's the breakfast sliders, the lunchtime wraps, or any of the classic sandwiches and subs that they've been putting out for decade after decade after decade. You don't stick around that long without doing something right. They do a lot of things right with Dandy. Folks, when you're hungry for food on the go, do what I do. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars had a 17-0 lead at Indianapolis early on, and they could not score a whole lot of points in the second half as they fall to the Colts 24-20. The Jaguars finished the 2016 season 3-13. A lot of adversity for this team, and Blake Bortles talked about facing that adversity.
What even kind of magnifies it is it's at the highest level. You know, this is going on at the highest level in the world. It's difficult. It's hard. It's, you know, there's a lot of guys in tough situations. You know, but we all kind of went through it and went through it together. I've said it before. I think that'll make us stronger. I think that, you know, a couple years down the road from now, when things have turned around and are going a different direction, I think guys will have a different kind of desire because of the things they've been through this year and these past couple seasons.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Tyler Devitt.
All right, final 10 minutes of the program. Midday Chalk coming up at the top of the hour. First broadcast for them in 2017 as well. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Loggeman here with you. Logs will be with us throughout the NFL playoffs, right up until Super Bowl week when Tony and I head to Houston. This year is where things are going. What's there to do in Houston, Logs? Anything good in Houston?
Yeah. I mean, it's a Fogo de Show. The Brazilian Steakhouse is a must-go. Have you ever been to one of those?
No. I've heard about them, though.
Yeah, it's one of those,
just keep bringing you meat.
Yeah, they give you a coaster, and one side is red, one side is green. They have a big salad bar, which I'm a huge fan of tomato and mozzarella with the balsamic vinegar on top. And I get a big giant plate of that, and then you put the coaster in front on your table. If it's green, that means they just keep coming by asking you, would you like this style of meat? And
right.
They have, I don't know, probably 20 different kinds. And if you turn it red, then they leave you alone for a little bit. But, man, if you like to eat meat like I do, you will love that place.
All right. Brazilian Steakhouse. Mark that one down on the agenda, Tony.
You're going to be there for a couple of days.
We'll be there for a week.
Week.
Yeah, Papacitos, the Mexican place is very good. But Houston's pretty spread out, so I like the cities that are a little bit more connected.
I do too, man. If they did the Super Bowl in Indianapolis every year, I'd be a happy guy. But
yeah, Indy's a good town.
Indy's a good town to cover a sporting event.
Yes.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm there for. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not – we went to San Fran. It was fun. We got to do a few fun things last year. But
great city.
It was a good
to
city.
To visit.
Right. great city with a major, major homeless problem. I mean, something that I've never seen in any city I've been in the United States of America. And I've been in New York long before they cleaned up Times Square, and I've never seen anything like I saw in San Francisco, and that's during the week when they moved a lot of those homeless folks out of the city.
Yeah, they've got a homeless problem with NFL teams there, too.
Apparently they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, a couple more here on the Twitter and text line. A couple questions about a 3-4 defense. We get them periodically. Head coach came in, hired a defense coordinator that wanted to run a 3-4 defense. Is that
no problem?
Easy enough transition.
Well, it's a transition. It's not seamless. So
what do you think they'd be more effective in?
I don't know the answer to that, Micah, because there's no way of truly. I mean, personnel wise, I think they could do either one. And you've got I think everybody in this defense, for the most part, the guys that are what I'm talking about are up front, because that's really where it's different at. They have experience in a 3-4. Sendarek's got experience in a 3-4. Malik has experience in a 3-4. Roy Miller could play 3-4. Avery Jones can play anywhere. He, by the way, was fantastic again this past Sunday. So Yannick that can stand up. Dante can stand up. Miles Jack, Paul Posluszny, Telvin Smith need one more linebacker that's a good backup special teams player. So, I mean, yeah, you got flexibility. I think they could be successful in either one, and especially because the way that they play 3-4s nowadays, there's not that great of a difference between a 4-3 and a 3-4.
We talk a lot about, I think a lot of people assume Julius Thomas won't be back here in Jacksonville. Do you think there is a chance that he does return?
I think there's a chance, but I think that chance is would have to include a pay cut. So, I mean, if a new coach comes in and says, hey, look, I really feel strongly about him having a role in our offense, and, the discussion probably happens about him taking a pay cut, because if Julius were on the open market, I don't know if he would necessarily be able to garner that kind of money.
What he's getting now.
Sure.
Right. Bomb Julius, I want to.
But Julius might want to just leave.
Right. Or he'd say, hey, I'll take a chance that I can get the same or better somewhere else.
Yeah, because,
you're offering.
The one thing about Julius Thomas is, or any player that's in that position, is that, okay, if you take a pay cut, you take a pay cut. There's still no guarantee you're going to make the team. If you say, no, I'm not going to take a pay cut, just release me, then you're looking at guaranteed money once again. So from a player standpoint, with a player in his position who does have some numbers, has had some great production in his career, you would probably be more willing to find out what kind of money would be available on the open market. Not that you would make, the same salary or better, but the amount of guaranteed money that you would get would be something compared to possibly nothing here.
Logman coaching the D-line, if a team came to you and said, we're interested, or a coach said, hey, I'm interested in adding you to my staff, would you be interested in pursuing a coaching career?
No, I would not.
Okay, that answers that. Let's see. Optimally, this one from Jeff on the Facebook page, how many offensive linemen need to be upgraded? Should Linder be moved back to left guard or to guard, period?
Absolutely not. He's been the best offensive lineman this year. And I've said this in years past, that out of your two guards and your center, if you had if you had your choice of putting or having a best player at any of those three positions, so in other words, you got one player and he can play all three of them at a very high level, where do you put him? You put him at center because he's the captain of the offensive line. He makes all the calls. And on top of that, he blocks somebody on every play that conceivably could make the play. I thought Brandon Leonard's play this year was very good. I mean, really good. He's a good football player. He is clearly head and shoulders above everybody else. They need to find more Brandon Leonards to play alongside him. And during a game, you know, he'd end up leaving that game against the Colts on Sunday, had towel over his head, you know, supposedly reported as a concussion. There were two blows, because when I was watching the film yesterday, I wanted to see when it occurred. There were two blows that he took from linebacker Antonio Morrison that absolutely jarred his helmet in a huge fashion. And at the end of that drive, he didn't come back. Antonio Morrison, who I had talked with Doug Marone about on the Week Jaguars weekend show, he's like the Energizer Bunny. Man, he just wants to hit anything and everything. And he's a striker. And he delivered some blows, and Linder got two of them.
So how many offensive line positions are you comfortable with right now? Like that you say, Linder's going to be the center, he's going to be the starter, not a problem.
I mean, as far as where they're at right
yes.
now, I mean, to me, I'm not comfortable with any of the other ones.
So yeah. are you picking up Beecham's extension?
I'm picking it up, but, you know, when I say I'm not comfortable with any of them, I'm not comfortable with the level that Kelvin Beecham has played at this past year. You know, because it wasn't good enough.
But if you do pick up that extension,
you're picking it up expecting him to get healthier, to regain more of the form that he had when he was with Pittsburgh.
Right, and you're not, likely not seeking to bring in a guy to push him out of the starting role because you're committing a significant chunk of money.
Well, the
to
great
him.
Thing about, I think, his contract is that there's not a whole lot of risk for picking up that contract.
In future years.
Exactly. So you pick that up without question. But as far as bringing in competition, absolutely you do. And I think you bring competition in, and I think we talked about this a week or two ago, to where you bring another tackle in and you say, okay, let's let the best two tackles play. Well, if it's, you know, the guy comes in and he's the best left tackle and Parnell's the best right tackle, then you roll with it, you know. So you always try to upgrade, you know. And I think you always make a mistake when you stand pat and think you've got something solved, because that's where you make a mistake first and foremost as an organization. When you think you have all the pieces in place and you think you're one piece or two pieces away, that's where you end up getting, you know, kind of stuck in a rut, so to speak.
Yeah.
And right now this organization is stuck in a rut because they won three games, you know, and the year before that they won five. I mean, you got comfort is not a good thing. And so you never feel comfortable with anything, and you shouldn't feel comfortable with anything because you've only won, what is it, 15 games in 4 years?
Right. Now I'm with you. We'll end on that note right there. We've got the rest of the month to continue to dissect and start to look at some of these playoff matchups. Who you like? You like any upsets in the first week? You got Houston and Oakland. Who you like in that one? We'll do our picks later in the week.
That's so hard.
Battle the backup quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's Connor Cook going to bring to the table?
This is the game they signed Osweiler to win.
Yeah, Brock Osweiler back at quarterback. I got to give the advantage to the home team in that.
Yeah,
I'll tell you this, Mike.
Win this week.
I think Bill O'Brien is an excellent coach. I read some snippet yesterday that their question maybe even about him.
If he doesn't – right. If he got embarrassed in the first round of the playoffs again, he could be out.
If he loses his job, hire him right now. I think he's that good of a coach.
How about that? All right. That'll do it then.
Yeah.
You like the home teams for the most part this weekend. Anybody –
What are the other matchups?
We got Seattle-Detroit.
Seattle.
Green Bay and the Giants.
That's an interesting one there. And I know it's in Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers has been fantastic, but the Giants play really good defense. I think that's a pick 'em game.
Yeah, I think Green Bay probably win that one. I kind of like the chalky home teams. Pittsburgh-Miami. I think
Pittsburgh.
You got to go Pittsburgh big in that one
with
Matt Moore, quarterback. All right, Logs, happy New Year to you.
And to you.
We'll look forward to doing it the rest of the month of January. There he goes, Jeff Logman on Twitter, at Logs56, LOGS56. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks for hanging with us on the first day of the Jaguars Today show in 2017. We'll be back all the rest of this week, and as we continue to try to figure out how the Jags are going to get this thing turned around in the new year. All right, that does it for us. Midday Chalk coming up at the top of the hour. Thanks to all of you out there in Radio Land. We'll be back with you tomorrow right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
You guys have a good day. Peace.